What's up, Timberlake? Great to see you. My name's Rick, those of you that are guests. And yes, I stopped shaving. And it's been a very interesting adventure. I probably shaved for 3 decades, and then I just gave it up. And it's been just a wild little ride here for the last couple months because you go through stages. Some of you know what I'm talking about. When you first stop shaving, the first couple weeks, you're kind of in that sort of swine flu survivor look, you know? So you just look like you haven't been out for a while. Then, you know, then you're the cardboard sign by the freeway exit guy. And then eventually you look like you escaped from an institution. And then, you know, you just kind of keep, you know, trying to move on. And eventually, like my son told me the other day, he thinks I look like the most interesting man in the world. So I thought that was kind of a nice compliment. So I just wanted to say tonight, I don't always go to church, but when I do, I go to Timberlake. Stay thirsty, my friend. So, it's great to be with you, and I'm here to talk to you tonight about James, or today, or this morning, or this afternoon, or whenever you may actually absorb this little chat. But I want to talk about James. James is a letter that you find in the new part of the Bible, and I think that it's important for us to realize that, first of all, it is a letter. And there are a lot of James. I'm sure you have some James in your life, right? There are famous James in our culture. I can think of one James who's really quotable because he feels good. Woo! Like I knew that he would. You know what James that is? How many of you? Like all the younger people are like, I got no idea what you're talking about, kid. This is the godfather of soul, James Brown. Yeah, he's very quotable. We've got memorable James. Like, for instance, how many of you know that there's a James who is a great actor, a highly decorated actor, and also the voice of Darth Vader in the entire Star Wars epic? Who's that? James Earl Jones, good. And not James Earl Ray, that's a whole different guy that was an assassin. But this is a different James Earl. So James Earl Jones, yeah, and then we got probably one of the most famous fictional James is Bond. James Bond, right? So that's like kind of almost like a Twitter tag there for his name. And so we have not only quotable James, memorable James, fictional James, but we also have a biblical James. And this is the James that you find in the new part of the Bible who wrote a letter to the church. And he wrote for a very specific community of people that were going through very difficult times. And the thing that's interesting about James is that scholars that have studied this believe that James was actually a sibling of Jesus Christ. So, a half-brother of Jesus Christ, that Joseph and Mary went on to have a family, and the Bible does specify in different places, especially in the writings of the story of Jesus' life, that Jesus' mother and brothers, you know, had shown up in different circumstances. So, they believe that James, the James that wrote this particular letter that we have in the new part of the Bible, was actually a sibling of Jesus. Can you imagine how tough that would be? You know, I mean, how would you like to be Jesus' brother, right? And then Mary's like, so James, what did you do today? Jesus walked on water. You can't even pick up your clothes, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it'd be a lot of pressure to be James. And yet James, the Bible says, is known as James the Just. And history indicates that James was a great leader in the church, especially in Jerusalem. And not only was he kind of known as James the Just because he stood for what was right, but he's also known as the Bishop of Bishops, or the Pastor of all the pastors, or the Leader of all the leaders. And he was he started out kind of as a skeptic. If you read in the Bible, when Jesus went to his hometown of Nazareth, everybody there said, hey, wait a minute, this guy's a local guy. I don't think he's that amazing. And it said his family was skeptical. But as James began to understand what Jesus was up to, and certainly began to put together the facts of not only his crucifixion, but his resurrection, he became this great leader in Jerusalem and eventually was martyred for standing for the faith. So an incredible story and a life that's lived. And we have a letter from him. And he uses the format that most letters in this era used, which is to do a greeting. And so he says, hey, it's James. And then he says to who he's writing, and he says to those who are scattered abroad. And the Greek word there is diaspora, which means to be dislocated from your original home. So it's people that had been kind of shipped out. And some of you might be aware that during this time, the Romans ran the world. The Roman Empire was the dominant world power. And so whenever they'd come into an area or a country, one of the ways they would control the people in this sort of new territory is they would divide them up and ship them off to different locations so they couldn't sort of organize a revolt. And they sent people out of this part of the Middle East to all different points in their empire. And when they were shipped out, they were actually sold as slaves to different communities. And so these people that were receiving this letter were in very difficult circumstances. I don't know how many of you had a chance to see the Academy Award-winning film this year, 12 Years a Slave. Maybe you didn't see it, but you heard about it. But it's a story, you know, a true story of people that were literally just enslaved and, you know, and caused to work. And so these are the kinds of people that James is writing to. That's why when he makes reference in this letter, James makes reference to some of the people that are more affluent or people that, you know, are kind of the ones who run the slaves. He's not very positive because they're so cruel and so uncaring to the people that he's writing to. So it's very interesting. And so you can see, those of you that, some of you have already read this letter from James, you know, maybe you grew up in church or you stayed in a hotel where there was a Bible in, you know, on the table next to you, the bed there. But what happens is James starts out, I'm James, I'm writing to the people that are scattered. And his very first thing he talks about is, count it all joy when you fall into desperate times, difficult trouble. He says, you got to interpret this as an opportunity to grow. And so the number one word that James uses is a word, a Greek word, and I gave you a space on your notes there to write it down. It's called teleos. Everybody say that together? Teleos. Very nice Greek pronunciation. And teleos is a word that is used 19 times in the New Testament, in all the different books of the New Testament, but 5 times in this little letter that James wrote. So he's emphasizing this word teleos, and this word gets translated, and most of you realize that if you are reading an English Bible, that you have a translation from the original Greek. And we all know there are different kinds of translations. Maybe, you know, you have an NIV, New International Version. Maybe you have a New American Standard. But these are all versions of the original. And this word teleos gets translated in different ways. But this is what it means. There's a definition that I want to read to you. It means brought to its end, finished, lacking nothing necessary to completeness. A lot of translations use the word perfect. Perfect for teleos. And really what it means is mature, like to be full grown, fully developed, complete. That's where that word perfect is used. Some of you that are students of the Bible, you recognize that Jesus actually said this in the Sermon on the Mount. Be perfect, for your heavenly Father is perfect. He was using the word teleos. Be teleos, for your heavenly Father is teleos. You know, live a life with no missing parts because you serve a God that's complete. That's what he was saying. It's a very interesting little word. And the Apostle Paul actually uses the word often in his writings as well. And some of you might remember when Pastor Paul, in this one part of the Bible, he said that, hey, you know, things aren't always smooth with him. He said he has some afflictions. But he said, even with the difficulties that he faces, he has this kind of famous quote, his grace is sufficient for me. For in my weakness, what happens? I am made teleos, I'm made perfect. He said, he goes on to say that power is made perfect in weakness. That's the word. And that's the word that James uses. And how many of you have ever put together puzzles? Anybody here likes to do puzzles? Well, in our family, we kind of have this holiday tradition. You know, during the Advent, the Christmas season, we get a big, you know, couple thousand piece puzzle and dedicate this table to puzzling. And people that come over, you know, try to put a piece in and everything. But what's the greatest piece to put in if you're doing a puzzle, huh? It's that last piece. And sometimes what I do is when the puzzle's all laid out, I'll take like one piece and go hide it. Just so when it gets down to that last piece, like, what happened? We were missing a piece. And then, I'll say, I hit it. And then they'll say, well, where is it? And I'll say, I actually forgot. I don't know where it is. So we have to search the house, you know, and find it under a lamp somewhere. But that last piece in the puzzle is so exciting because it's complete. And you could literally say, if you had a puzzle that was all put together and had one piece, you could put that last piece in the middle of that puzzle and you could say the word teleos. And it would be a proper definition of complete, like, hey, it's all here. And so what James is talking about in this letter to you and I, or, you know, to the church at large, he's talking about living a life that is spiritually complete or mature or full grown. That's what he's talking about. And he's saying that, hey, even in difficult times, that doesn't stop this development that God can do in our lives. And so he goes on to teach about that. And kind of the key verse in the key teleos text, I'll put it, is when James says in the first chapter in verse 4, don't try to get out of anything prematurely. He says, like, don't try to, you know, skip the difficult stuff. Don't take a shortcut. He says, let's do it, let it do its work, and you'll become mature. Mature, teleos, that's the word. And then he defines it this way, well-developed. Not deficient in any way, without any missing parts, right? So that's what he's saying. And he's talking about when you go through trouble, don't try to suspend the circumstance. In some translations that you may have heard of, or maybe, you know, like I was a Sunday school kid, so I memorized a lot of different versions of the Bible, but count it all joy, right, when you fall into trials and difficulties, because it's going to do this perseverance work, and it's going to fully develop who you are. That's what James starts out with. That's the key verse. And I received a letter, speaking of letters, from a friend of mine who's in prison. You really hope that you don't have to send one of these where it has a stamp on the bottom that says you're in a Washington State Correctional Facility. But I don't often have, personal friends who are in prison. I mean, I just have a friend who, he went through this difficult circumstance, was in a car accident. There was a fatality, and he was charged with vehicular homicide. I was at his trial. I was at his sentencing. I was, looking through the window when the bailiff handcuffed him, and he looked over his shoulder at his family, and they carried him off, and he's in Shelton. So I wrote him a letter to try to encourage him, because I thought, man, you know, this guy, this is tough. This is a guy, and I'm not making this up. I actually wrote him saying, you know, after he wrote me this letter, I said, hey, is it okay if I share some of your letter? Because it was such an encouragement to me. And so he gave me permission, you know, to share some of his letter. But this guy had never had he's never had a parking ticket. He's never had a speeding ticket. I mean, this is, he's a business owner. He employs 40 people in South Puget Sound. He has 4 retail outlets. He's got 5 children. He's a great citizen. But he's in prison. And here's what he wrote me. He said, here's what's happening. And he wrote me an 8-page letter, which I thought, wow, because really the letter that James wrote is not this long. James' letter is 5 chapters. You can read it in about 15 minutes. And he wrote this 8-page letter. And here's what he said. You know, first he tells me how it's going and everything. But then he says this. This has been the most amazing part of the journey. I'm quoting him here. Rick, I can say that when I got here, as I mentioned, I was in shock, and I was really questioning God, and why is this happening to me? But since I've been here, it's become and is becoming abundantly clear why I'm here. I believe the Lord is using, you know, this circumstance in his life to get his attention. He said, when you're in a place of isolation, loneliness, and you have to totally depend on God, then, It's like this remarkable thing that's happening. He begins to describe this spiritual renewal that's happening to him in prison. And he says he was caught up in the business of life, in his business with his family, with his employees, with bills, with friends, with in-laws, with activities, with school, with working on the house, with going to every Seahawk, Husky, and sports thing he can think of. Like, he was just busy. And then he goes on to say this. I was so busy that God was really not a vital part of my life. And I did not lead my family. How could I lead my family, he said, if God wasn't leading me. Then he goes on to say this very interesting thing. Shortly after he arrived at Shelton, he got a letter from somebody, and this is what the letter said. And he said it kind of sort of like they kind of wrote it as if God were speaking to him. This is what this woman wrote in this letter right when he arrived. Do not wish any of these days away, because the most powerful work God does is often in hospitals and prisons. When you're sick and you're desperate. Isn't that interesting? And when I read that, here I am, I'm reading this letter that James wrote to all of us, and then I get a letter from my friend, and it reflects this maturity that's happening you know, this teleos experience where he's saying, hey, I'm going through a really difficult time. And he actually says, of course I don't want to be here. Of course I can't wait till I, you know, serve my whole sentence and get back. But at the same time, I wouldn't trade this. I'm not trying to wish these days away because of what's happening in here. And he goes on to tell me all kinds of stuff. He's hearing from God. And he keeps getting these ideas to go talk to people. And he's thinking, he has big arguments, you know, in his head, like, I don't really think that's a good idea. You know, and he's finding himself involved in, you know, what we would call incredible ministry while he's in this situation. That's what James was talking about. Don't wish the days away. That's pretty tough to do when we're going through hard times. And there's some things that maturity is not, and I want to go through that real quickly. First of all, spiritual maturity is not chronological. It doesn't mean because you're old and you have a gray beard that you're spiritually mature. There are old people that are very immature spiritually. There are young people that are very mature spiritually. It's the vitality of your relationship with God. It doesn't have to do with how old you are. So we don't want to sort of stereotype any one of us that way, right? The second thing it's not genetic. You know, there is no friends and family sort of package, you know, for maturity. It's not like, well, my parents are really good people and they go, you know, they know God, so I'll just get in on, you know, like, you know, the family plan, right? There's no bundle, you know, there's no like, you know, maturity bundle that you get in on. And in fact, there's an old saying that says this: God doesn't have grandchildren. He has children. And, you know, all of us are accountable in terms of a relationship with others and with God. And just because we come from, you know, or maybe the opposite, just because we come from a family that's just struggled and just had, you know, no spiritual depth does not mean that it's going to, you know, that we're going to inherit that. And some of my great friends have come out of just chaos, and their families don't look anything like the family of origin that they had because of the work that God's done in their life. So it's not genetic. It's not chronological. And it's also not entitled. Just because you have a PhD in spiritual stuff, or you're called pastor somebody, or you got a microphone and you're 6 feet above contradiction, that doesn't mean that you're spiritually mature. And it's, you know, but sometimes, now we hope that your title would reflect something. You know, we're thankful for people that serve as elders and deacons and leaders and all that. We're thankful for that. But just because you have a title doesn't mean you're spiritually mature. Sometimes it's good place to hide out and could be a smokescreen, you know. And so it's important for us to realize what maturity is not. But James talks about what it is in his letter to us. And one of the big themes James says about maturity is that it's observable. It's observable. Yeah, in James 1:25, he begins to talk about that. And then in chapter 4, he starts to sort of expand on it. He said, remember, it is sin to know what you ought to do and then not do it. James is all about, you know, and some of you have read, you know, this letter before, and he says, you want to talk about your faith? Then show me. What are you doing? How are you involved? You say, hey, I'm a spiritually mature person. Oh, really? What have you signed up for on Easter Sunday? I mean, how are you serving? You can't just say, like, hey, I'm spiritually mature. You can't see it. It's all secret and inside. No, James says, it's observable. If you're mature, you're going to be involved. You're going to be able to describe activities that you're doing, okay? In fact, this is kind of like the kind of the Nike element that James has. Just do it. He's saying, you know, you can't just say it or just sing it. You have to do it. You have to be able to describe that, you know, you've been involved. And you know, I know so many of you at Timberlake, you could tell me stories about being in Haiti and working in the orphanage. You could tell me about, you know, serving around here on a weekend or just, you know, in your own neighborhood. That's what James is saying. If you say, hey, I want to mature. I want to be fully grown spiritually. I want to have all the pieces of the puzzle. I want to be complete. I want to live a perfect, in that sense, life, right? I don't want to miss out on what God has. You should be able to see it. It's observable. And you'd be surprised how many people watch what you're up to. Now we, as a family, we do a very simple thing, which obviously people that are here on the weekend would do. We get in our car and we drive to church, to a church, you know, location where the, you know, where the church, the people are gathered, right? And we've had, over the years, living in the same neighborhood, people have said to us, yeah, we know you, we see you go to church every week. Well, how do you know? Well, we figured it out. You keep leaving on Sunday mornings, you know, and you keep going. You're like, and, you know, and you'd be surprised. Like, people are just in having coffee, and they are watching. They're observing. And it's very important for us to be able to be comfortable with that, just to be able to say to people, hey, watch, just, you know, watch our lives. We're following Jesus. Maturity is observable. Second thing that James talks about a lot, but in chapter 3 he highlights it, is it's a mature person is under control. Yeah, James talks a lot about it in terms of your vocabulary. He's famous for saying, you know, that if you speak hurtful words or shout in anger or profanity, you know, you're not mature. But if you have that under control, that's a demonstration of maturity. That's what he says. If you can control your tongue, you can control the rest of your body. And James uses some pictures that some of you have heard his stories before, but he talks about how a bridle, you know, just that little bit in the horse's mouth can, you know, can give direction to this huge, incredible animal, right? And he talks about a ship, that you can have a huge ship, but there's this little rudder in back that's relatively insignificant compared to the rest of the ship that steers the whole vessel. He says that's our vocabulary, and it has to be under control. In fact, James actually says that when you're with someone who is agreeable, that's the word he uses. You know, you're with them, and you just enjoy being with them. Because why? They're just not a jerk. They say things that they don't, it's not awkward. I mean, it's you look forward to spending time with them because they're under control. And when we actually run into somebody who's not under control, it's an immaturity in their lives. Last Sunday, I showed up at, you know, a church where I was going to teach the Bible and was early and helping kind of get things together. And this guy comes in and he says, hey, how are you doing? I go, great. He goes, let me tell you, really interesting thing just happened to me. I go, what is it? He said, well, I was crossing the bridge, the Narrows Bridge, which is, you know, in Tacoma, going into Gig Harbor. And he said, I'm on my way, you know, to come to church this morning, come a little early, help out. And he said, there's this guy behind me flashing his lights and honking his horn. I'm thinking, you know, sorry. And then the guy goes around me and gets in the, you know, kind of the HOV lane and flips him off. And then just, you know, takes off. And he's thinking, wow, man, is that guy tense, you know? Ooh, you know, like road rage. Like, there's nobody on the road on Sunday morning. Just him and one guy. And the guy's mad at him for being in front of him, right? And so he notices, you know, that the guy's taking this exit. Hey, that's the exit he's taking. Hey, you notice the guy's turning left? Hey, that's the exit. And he noticed the guy, he's going to the same church. And he said, he's right over there, you know. And it's really interesting how whatever's happening in our lives that would cause us to, you know, fail in this area is a point of immaturity. That's what James says. He's very explicit about that. A mature person is under control, agreeable, thoughtful, somebody you want to spend time with. And then James also goes into this final idea that a mature person is a communal person. In other words, maturity is forged in community. Henry Nouwen, who's a famous writer, you know, and guy who's done some amazing things, he was an academic leader, and then he went and lived with people that were developmentally disabled in the L'Arche community, where people who are, you know, who are handicapped, physically and mentally handicapped, and he worked with them. And this is where he really met his understanding of who God was in this kind of a community. And he says this, that compassion, if you want to live in compassion, you got to live in community. If you want to experience people walking with you through difficult times, and James just assumes, I mean, when James writes this letter to the church, he assumes you're in a growth group. He doesn't even think, it doesn't enter his mind that you're not in a group with people that you're going doing life together. Because he says over and over and over in his letter, brothers and sisters. The very first thing he says out of the gate, I'm James, I'm writing to the church that's scattered, brothers and sisters. Count it all joy when you fall into difficult times. And he says, brothers and sisters, over and over and over again. And then eventually he sums it up in James 3:13. He says, who in your community is understanding and wise? Let his example, which is marked by wisdom and gentleness, blaze a trail for others. So he just assumes that you have a community. Because maturity, teleos, completeness, being full grown, right? It happens. It's a communal thing. You can't do it in an isolated setting. And those are some really important and helpful reminders, takeaways, you know, some advice, suggestions by this great leader in the early church that still applies today and is an encouragement to us to be spiritually full grown. I was thinking about probably in the history of my life, who are some people that I know, that I've met, that I've crossed paths with, that they exhibited this to me. I saw in their life, you know, I could observe this maturity in their lives. I watched them. And then I saw that they were under control, they were agreeable, they were fun to be with. And then I noticed that they were surrounded by others, that they had great friendships, they lived in community, they were part of a worshiping community, a church, and they served there. And so I thought of several folks that I've had a chance to privilege of knowing, but I thought of Emmett and Evelyn. Emmett and Evelyn, they were a couple. Their names almost just became like one word because they were always together, Emmett and Evelyn. It was just like one giant word. And they lived in Maple Leaf, which is, you know, just kind of north of the U District in Seattle. And they were so much fun. You look forward to running into them because they were excited to see you. And when I would walk around this particular church in Seattle that we were a part of, I would say to people, hey, I don't know if I've met you. Oh, no, I don't think I know you. And I'd introduce myself, and they'd say, well, only people we know are Emmett and Evelyn. Like, everybody I met knew Emmett and Evelyn. They were like this common denominator in everybody's life. And so I went, and I said, hey, it's amazing to me that everybody knows you. Like, I see people that come to church. Hey, this is our first day at church. We've never been here before. Oh, really? Well, it's nice to meet you. Emmett and Evelyn, we know them. And I'm thinking, before they ever went to church, but they still know them. They ran into them somewhere. So I said, hey, tell me, you know, something about how this happens, how you're so engaging and so involved, and you're just, you know, you're just having, you're living this life that's just amazing to watch. Their lives really were full of joy. And here's one thing that they told me. They said, well, every Sunday, we set the table for 8 people. There's just 2 of them. They live, you know, just the 2 of them live in this little house in Maple Leaf. They set the table. So I went to their house, and when they set the table, they're talking about every Sunday, they bring the china out. Like, it's like Thanksgiving style. What I realized over time was that they were caterers in, you know, this is what their business was, that they're retired. So they really knew how to you know, create a meal and an experience. And then they would just set the table, and there'd be 8 spots, and there's only 2 of them, and then they would pray. Okay, Lord, we're going to pay attention and, you know, lead us to people that you want us to meet. And so they would just take off. And it could be like at the grocery store on the way to church on a Sunday, and they'd be waiting in line to get a coffee, and they'd say, how are you doing? What are you doing for lunch? I mean, like, they're just asking people, like, all the way through. And then, when they got to church, you know, Emmett would be over here, and Evelyn would be over here, and she'd be talking to, you know, somebody, and all, she'd look over and go, like, I got 2, you know, and, like, they had to keep track. And every Sunday, they had this incredible, just amazing feast, you know, even if the food wasn't, like, unbelievable, but the time was, you know, the experience was. It was a feast of ideas and of friendship. And these people were incredibly spiritually mature. And the more I got to know about them, the more I heard stories of difficulty, hardship, the death of a child. Emmett fought for our country in hostile territory. I mean, there was all kinds of things that happened in their lives. So you know, because we might assume, well, oh, here's a couple that just had it easy, right? They just, you know, they were just laughing all the time because, you know, their life was so simple. Not true. Their life was not easy or simple, but they were mature. They were spiritually really, really amazing. It was observable. They were under control, agreeable, a great experience to hang out with. And they really believed in relationship, in community. And so they're an example to me. And when I read this letter that James wrote, I think, wow, he just wants us all to experience life without any missing parts. And so I think that there's got to be some of us, you know, during this time we're thinking, you know, I got some room to grow. But the key is, let's be the kind of people who set the table. We live our lives like in anticipation of what God's going to do. We set the table first. Instead of running into people, oh, hey, I guess it's going to work out, you know. No, man, we're just going to live lives of anticipation. And that's this incredible letter that James wrote us. And so I hope you could find yourself maybe thumbing through that, five little chapters, and you'd recognize this incredible theme of teleos, maturity, fullness, this perfection that God has for us. So pray with me.